Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to another Empire Podcast interview special. The Wicker Man turns 50 this year, and to celebrate, Studio Canal are re-releasing the final cut version of Robin Hardy and Anthony Schaefer's seminal folk horror movie, remastered in glorious 4K, in cinemas on one day only, this Wednesday, June 21st. Summer solstice, Lord Summer Isle himself would approve. Of the major cast members, sadly, Edward Woodward, Christopher Lee, Diane Salento and Ingrid Pitt have all passed on. Only the legendary Britt Eklund is still with us, and what a force of nature she remains, as I discovered when I sat down with her in London about 6 weeks ago to talk about The Wicker Man and her relationship with it. Because as Nancy Meyers might say, it's complicated. For years, if you were to bring up The Wicker Man to Eklund, chances are she'd have emulated Woodward Sergeant Howie and yelled, "Oh God! Oh Christ! Oh Jesus Christ!" at the mere mention of its name. Eklund's performance as Willow, the seductive pub landlord's daughter, is one of the film's most memorable, but she suffered the ignominy of being doubled not once but twice, with her dialogue, Scottish accent and all, dubbed by Annie Ross, and her body doubled for one of the film's most famous scenes by, as legend has it, a local exotic dancer. And she wasn't particularly happy about that, or indeed her treatment by the film's director, Robin Hardy. But, as I discovered in this fun interview, Eklund, now aged 80, would you believe, has indeed come to terms with all of that, and has much to say about The Wicker Man and its place in a fascinating career that is still going strong and includes Liss, Get Carter, and The Man with the Golden Gun, to name but three. Come, it is time to keep your appointment with The Wicker Man. Enjoy. We are delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by the legendary Britt Eklund. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good, good. Apart from the weather, of course.
Well, I'm used to it now. From Los Angeles to Sweden to London, it's the same grey, overcast, cold, slightly rainy. But that's okay.
That's okay. We deal with it. We roll with the punches.
Yeah.
Of course, you're in town at the moment, but you were at a big celebration of The Wicker Man, which is incredibly 50 years old this year. How does that make you feel, first of all, Britt?
I was more shocked that my son told me, "Mom, I'm going to be 50 in June." And then I realized, of course, yes, The Wicker Man would be 50 too.
Because you were pregnant with
your son. Because I was pregnant, yeah.
Wow.
It's, you know, the thing which I realized today with The Wicker Man is that it kind of never aged.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing in it to age for, you know. But people kind of look like that today if they are doing those kind of rituals and so it's just me that has changed. I'm the only one that has aged.
Not that much, I have to say. You're looking very well.
Well, I'm the only one left, so you have to say that.
Well, I don't have to say that. I do not have to say that. I'm under no contractual obligation to say that whatsoever. But is it? I know that it's a movie that you've had a somewhat troubled relationship over years.
Oh, yes. Yeah, oh, very troubled. It was a kind of difficult time in my life anyway, because I lived in London and the father of my unborn son that I haven't discovered I was with yet lived in LA, Lou Adler. Then when I discover that I'm pregnant and then I have to be up there wandering around the moors and wander, because the film is basically one long procession with a lot of drumming. And it was funny, actually, last night at the screening here in London, I'm sitting there like on first row because I'm going to go up and talk.
Yeah.
And suddenly I hear this, dun, 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 and I'm thinking, oh. And suddenly there's a Christopher Lee lookalike, a tall man with long black wig, literally right next to me. And I'm like, wow. And, you know, a lot of memories came back, not all good, but today I've kind of made up with my younger self, and it is quite an extraordinary film.
It is. I mean, you mustn't have expected this to have lasted as long. This is one of the films that of your career. This is one of the films that people will always talk about. At the time when it came out, it wasn't treated very well by the studio that made it, by British Lion. It wasn't distributed very well. It wasn't received critically that well either. But it's become this classic, this enduring classic. And that must have surprised you.
I don't think any of us, people say, oh, you know, how did you get the film? And what did you think? And, you know, treating it intellectually. And I said, well, you know, my agent just called me and said, I have this script. It's in Scotland. There's not a lot of money in it. It's a low budget film. But, you know, I'm an actress. And sometimes you do a low budget, and other times you do a James Bond.
Yes.
So I just said yes. And then I was sort of stranded on the moor for whatever, 6-7 weeks, however long the shoot was, in a time where we should really be inside looking at the fire.
Because it was October, not September, October. Wow.
So from that point of view, it wasn't a film where you really could kind of hang out with each other, because I think we stayed in a hotel called the George.
Right, yeah.
Which was slightly outside of Newton Stewart and outside of our location. So it's not that you could just wander out and walk down the main street of Newton Stewart. You were isolated.
Yeah.
And it was very much a film where each person took care of themselves. There was no community spirit.
I know, for example, that Edward Woodward kept himself to himself at the time.
And Christopher Lee.
Okay.
I made friends with Diane Cilento.
Yeah.
We became very good friends during the film. And, of course, Ingrid Pitt was the queen of Hammer. So I believe that they had wanted her in my role. And I believe that she wanted that role. I don't know why they chose me, because, I mean, I was an established actress. But, you know, they choose me and then they take my voice away. So
yes.
That's a bit of a mystery. I did do my own Scottish accent at one point, and there should be a reel somewhere with my interpretation of
I'd love to hear it.
Willow spoke. But I'm sure that's buried underneath the M1.
That's the thing.
Not the M3.
Probably driven past it dozens of times. There's Brett's voice.
Yes, that's my voice on that.
Yeah.
I think there was lots of things going against me.
Yeah.
I don't think that, but saying that, I think today it doesn't really do any good to anyone for me to look back in anger.
Of course.
So you know, I've dealt with it and I go on. And I took my younger son to see it when it came out in 2014.
That's about right. Yeah, 10 years ago.
I didn't see the version last night but I don't know if it's the same film.
I believe it is. I believe it is. This is the final cut, as they say, but it's been remastered.
That was same in 2014 then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, there is one clip that I have seen on YouTube, which I really liked. And that's me in the window and Christopher Lee and Mark Lester outside, and him saying, you know, go and do your whatever you want to do.
Whatever you want to do with Willow.
basically. Yeah. You make sure that you do it, you know. And I don't know what that was cut out. Because it wasn't in any.
Yeah.
Was it in 2014?
It was in the 2014 version.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Because I've only ever, I think maybe in my head, I only ever seen it on on YouTube. I love that little scene.
It's a great scene.
Yeah. And the thing is that before that clip, which is, it must be before, because I did James Bond after, I did a film with Mark Lester called Night Hair Child.
Okay, yeah.
And so I knew him. Mm-hmm. I'd worked with him,
right,
which is strange.
Yes.
I'm glad that's in there. Okay.
Absolutely.
Settle that.
So for a while, it was you and Mark Lester, you and Christopher Lee. You were just making movies with each other.
Oh, yeah. It was just us, no one else.
Just you, no one else. I have to say, I think it's wonderful that you have kind of reconciled yourself with the movie over the years, given what happened. I can't imagine it would be easy to have. I don't know when you knew, for example, that you were being voice doubled. I think you knew you were being body doubled, but not voice doubled.
No, I mean, I didn't even know that. I had the day off. See, there were problems in the production. They had financial problems. And also, Robin Hardy had heart problems.
Right.
So there was a problem with insurance for him. I remember these things vaguely. And so maybe they just shot exterior one day and didn't need me. So I went down to London on the night train.
Right.
And went to the doctor and, you know, had confirmed that I was pregnant. And then when I came back up, I'm told, you know, that they shot this scene yesterday. But no one said before I left that this is what we're doing. So that was kind of a shock. And I never really knew that they were replacing me with Annie Ross until the film came out.
Wow.
And I never really saw the film when it came out because I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And by the time the film came out, I don't know if it came out like in the following fall. Do you remember when the film came out?
It came out in 1973, but I can't remember
when. My son was born in June 73. Yeah. So, and then I went back to LA and so I never really saw the film.
Yeah.
Until I believe 2014, but I could be wrong. So, yeah, it was a huge shock. Really, really huge.
It must have felt, you know, horrifying for you to have your performance taken away from you.
Of course it is.
An aspect of your performance.
Of course. And if you look at the sort of that scene, if you look at me knocking on the walls and singing softly and looking nice and smiley and da 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 da. And then you suddenly cut back to this violent butt shaking and then back to this soft, you know, who thought that you could put the backside like this and the front side like this? To me, it was quite shocking when I see it. I said, I mean, there's no matching of the movements or, you know, whether it's a naked body or not, it should kind of slightly match. But
the movements should match, yeah.
This was a hardcore gyrating bottom.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many rumors, who is this bottom? And they say, well, it's a stripper. And I would go with a stripper because no normal body double would use such violent movements as she did.
Nowadays, it's all the rage. People are... hardcore gyrating bottoms as far as the eye can see, Brit.
Everywhere.
Absolutely everywhere. I want to ask about the end of the film. I want to ask about the Wicker Man itself. You're freezing cold. You're outside in Scotland. It's October. But it must have been one hell of a sight as well once you saw the finished thing.
It was. You know, we really weren't around the Wicker Man that much, you know, because we were always a procession. We were processing when they...
Through the town, through the street.
When the town, and when they did the sword thing, they cut, you know, they're going to cut the fool's head off. And and the Morris dances and all that. And then there was another procession when we were walking towards the cliffs to look for Rowan in the cage in there. And then, you know, there's another procession when we walk to see him burn. So we really never saw the Wicker Man, because the Wicker Man was built in one place and we were in another place. So when we finally went out there and saw it, it was absolutely awe-inspiring. It made the Eiffel Tower look like a toothpick, you know, because it was so big and wide. Do you know what I mean? It was like, it wasn't like just a scrawny bit of hay and twigs. It was just wide, with wide arms and legs and the head thing. And then, you know, they had put animals in there, but no animal was ever burnt or injured in any way. But you heard the noises of these animals in there.
Yes.
And then you see Edward Woodward in there, you know, not necessarily whilst we're shooting, but, you know, a form of rehearsal. And it was just, it was awesome, but also very, very scary, very horrifying. I mean, are they really going to do this? Mm. And then eventually, you know, there are the man with the things to set it on fire. And that was, you know, a one take job.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like in The Man with the Golden Gun, when James Bond and the Texas sheriff drives over this bridge and the car has to do, you know, one or two swivels and land on the other side. Once one, you couldn't do it again, basically. So it was very scary, the whole thing. Very kind of, you felt very small. Mm.
It's one of the greatest endings of all time, not just in horror, quote unquote, but in any film.
Yeah, but you know that I didn't know I was doing a horror film. I don't think
there was too much singing for it to be a horror film.
I think maybe I should have known, because Ingrid Pitt and Christopher Lee was in it. But you know, I didn't really know Hammer films as such. You know, I've never been a fan of horror. Uh-huh. I never watch horror films. So I was just doing a film in the Scottish Highlands, and that was it.
Yes.
With a strange ending. So, yeah, I mean, it was very peculiar. The whole thing was very peculiar.
Very peculiar indeed. And I've got to go in a second, Britt, but I said to you just before we sat down that I met you briefly a few years ago when you came to the Empire Awards, when I believe you were presenting an award to Roger?
To Christopher Lee.
Yes, because we had Roger and we had Christopher Lee at various things as well. So did you speak, did you keep in contact with Christopher Lee over the years?
Well, the interesting thing is that, of course, during the Wicker Man, very private man, no joking or joisting or anything like that. He was the complete opposite to Roger Moore. And the same during James Bond. So when I finally, in the very early 90s, give him the Empire Award, which I presented to him, and I'm sitting at the same table, we became best friends. And, you know, we're talking about the Wicker Man. I said, God, you must have got so much money. And no, he said, no, I didn't. Because, you know, none of us got money. So we figured someone got the money. And he didn't either. And it was like, I think that he had gotten rid of that Hammer coat. He had like a Hammer coat on him, which he wanted to throw many, many years. And I think The Wicker Man was the first of films in the row to get rid of that. And once he was, you know, an actor, I think he felt very comfortable and easy and life was different. Because he didn't like to be the King of Hammer.
No.
That was not his destiny. And of course it wasn't, because he was a wonderful actor. And very clever. And he was married to Dane, You know, we Scandinavians, we've got to stay together. You've got to
stick together. He was a fascinating man. I mean,
he was. You know,
served in World War II.
And he was an opera singer.
Opera singer.
And he was a relative of...
Ian Fleming.
Ian Fleming, yeah, of course.
Friends with Tolkien.
I know.
Incredible.
I just thought, wow, you know. No, he was. He was a very interesting man. And it's a shame that we, in a way, that in the 70s and... we were so wrapped up in our careers and what we did and our images and that we couldn't kind of go, tell me, you know.
Yeah.
But we did in the 90s. We were able to open up.
You got there in the end, which is nice.
I did.
And what about yourself, Britt? You said there that Christopher Lee wanted to kind of, he had this cloak of hammer on him and he wanted to throw that off.
Mm.
Did you find in your career you had a similar cloak that you wanted to throw off? And
No. I know my limitations as an actress. I the 60s and the 70s, of course, was a very good period.
Mm-hmm.
And then because I wasn't in that mold anymore, other actresses took over. And then I went to other formats, theater, TV, et cetera, et cetera. I wrote books, I did videos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everyone is destined to be a Maggie Smith or, you know, someone like that.
Sure,
There has to be actors that are not the most fabulous and fantastic, because otherwise we are all incredibly incredible. There's no difference between people. So, you know, I knew where I belonged and I stayed within that. And I've done most of the things that I can do well.
Yeah.
I'm a perfectionist, so my life is very traumatic, as you have to understand. Because the truth is that if you're a perfectionist, you never achieve your goal, ever.
You're never happy.
And no. And you always strive. And people say, oh, you look so good. I said, yeah, you know, it took a little while, it took a little time, you know. But no, it's been good. And hopefully there's a little bit left that
Absolutely.
I can give.
Yeah. All right, so what is in the future for you?
Nothing, you know, nothing that I feel this minute that I can talk about. I hate about actors say, well, you know, I have this really incredible thing. I'm sorry, we can't talk about it.
Yes.
Okay, then keep your mouth shut.
Believe me, I hate that too, Britt. When I ask that question.
I'm just Brexit mm-hmm. and COVID, not necessarily in that order, but certainly together, did a lot to take my career away because I was touring in a play and it was a role that suited me to a T.
Mm-hmm.
And I was meant to do a year and it just... So that kind of made me a little bit depressed last year, but I'm okay now. I'm looking forward to more exciting things.
Well, fingers crossed. I'm sorry to hear that, but fingers crossed for the future that everything clicks into place for you.
I hope so.
And obviously, as a perfectionist, Britt, do you want to do this interview again?
No, you'll just cut here and there, right?
I'll just cut here. All good. All
cut
good.
A little bit there and there. Then
oh, yeah.
You can add a bit of... so that you get the perfect interview.
I'll add some drums. Boom, boom, boom.
Okay.
Get them
That'd
in there.
That'd be lovely.
That'd be amazing. Britt Eklund, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much indeed.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Britt Eklund, and very good company she was too. And that's it for this podcast interview special. The Wicker Man 50th Anniversary Edition is out in cinemas for one day only, June 21st, folks. If you listen to this after June 21st, well, sorry, you've missed the boat. However, it should be out on home entertainment, DVD, Blu-ray, etc. later on in the year. Right, that's enough for me. It is time to say goodbye. I can hear all kinds of dancing and singing outside, and I'm going to check it out. Hang on. Can you smell smoke? Sure it's nothing to worry about. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.